This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
All right, Ali. So where do we really start with? There's been a lot that's really happened over the past few days, generally starting on markets, but give us your opinion. Where do we start with then?
I think a nice place to start would be the discussion on the government pushing Airtel to give a stake to Kenyans, and I think 30% stake. And I remember early in the office today we were having a discussion with you and Jackson. What do you think that means, especially for local ownerships in the ICT sector, and specifically for Airtel as a telco?
Well, Ali, in my opinion, just as we had said earlier on, I think what the government is really trying to do is, because what the government said was international ICT companies, ICT multinationals would actually be pushed to be in a position to sell at least 30% of their stake to locals. And you know, locals doesn't necessarily just have to be the usual lot we have where guys do IPOs and stuff like that. At times, local investors are actually could actually be the government itself. My opinion was, last year we saw the government set up, we actually saw the data commissioner office being set up in Kenya, and we had there's a lady who's holding that office. Sorry, I'm missing her name. But my thought process is, maybe what the government is really trying to do is to maybe just control a little bit of access to data that companies out here are really having. So that's primarily my idea. The government is trying to control just how much data is going out here, and maybe just what type of data these companies are going to access. We know that mostly what we've had with mobile money, the technology that's surrounding mobile money, if we give a lot of multinational corporations a lot of data, then they definitely need to be able to give something in return. So I think that's what the government is trying to do, and I'm hoping that they get successful to it. On the other hand, if these companies decide not to sell to investors, if this company, to the government, sorry, and the company moves and now starts selling through initial public offerings or listings on the exchange, then we are likely to see a lot of activity happen on the market for the Nairobi Securities Exchange. This would definitely be something good for it. It would also be important just so that we see what type of companies that we're going to have on the market, because companies like Airtel, we need to do a top-down valuation of the company just before we can be able to buy it. If Airtel comes and lists at a price of say 10 shillings, would it be justifiable, for example, before we can be able to buy in? So there's a lot of data that we need to just analyze before we get to pick. But in my opinion, I think the 30% listing that goes out to the 30% sellout for international ICT companies, I think that that's something that, in my opinion, I think it's supportive.
I would love to hear what the other people have to say. And I think I have to point this out. There were speculations that, you know, I'm requiring more of these companies to sell. The stake could trigger more listings. What do you think about it?
Well, Ali, you know, it's awesome that you said speculation. So I would leave it at that. I would say that speculation, it's something that most people are really just hoping that there are a lot of scenarios. You see, at any point when you're doing modeling, mathematical modeling, then when you're doing forecasting, you have to do a lot of hypothesis. So you'd be able to say, this is your hypothesis one and two and three and four. So there are a lot of hypotheses that we have, mostly when it comes to certain regulations being enacted. So in my opinion, I think this is something that we as a country need to be prepared for. This is something that we need to be able to hold up for. And I would just leave it at that and say it's speculation. You said it right, and I think that we don't need to say anything more than that.
Definitely, definitely. And if you're new here, you should definitely join in the discussion. You just feel free to chat over, or if you would like to speak up, raise your hand and let's hear you out.
If somebody would like to raise their hand, would like to speak, you can just let me know. And then if you want to contribute to the discussion, we're always open. It's a Friday. We're always curious. We're curious of knowing what your thoughts are. And also, if you don't want to follow this discussion, I know Ali is already starting up a discussion on HISA about we're curious. What are you curious about this weekend? So definitely head over to the HISA app and just check this out.
You're definitely right. Another thing, as we said earlier, in the last review, petrol prices especially hit quite a high, and we saw that IPRA decided to take a different approach. So earlier in the day, we saw that many expected fuel prices to rise to, you know, an all-time high. But then in the evening, we learned that IPRA decided to, you know, put a hold to all this. So petrol will just continue retailing at current prices at 122.8. What do you think is happening here? Because I was reading somewhere that we are able to maintain these prices at that point because we kind of shared retailers' margins. And I would be curious on the ramifications of holding the prices to last month's review in terms of inflation, especially for April, as well as how sustainable is it, given that we've seen that global oil prices have ticked kidogo. Oh, I'm sorry.
I think that's something that's very interesting, Ali. If you joined the Bulls, Bears and Whiskey on Wednesday, we had a discussion with Davis. Davis is not in here today, but we had a discussion with Davis, and Davis actually gave an in-depth explanation that oil prices have been maintained at the same rate, but because what the levels at which IEPRA, that's the energy regulator, was actually saying that they've maintained it because of the dollar, the shilling strengthening against the dollar. But in reality, what they actually did was to reduce the margins for the oil marketing companies. So you'd see they reduced the margins for, I think, by about 5%, by about 5 shillings actually, from 12 shillings to about 7 shillings. So whatever they've done is companies that mostly the small guys on the market, these companies that have lower scale oil marketing strategies, these are the companies that are likely to be hit when it comes to now. Generally, their revenues are likely to be hit when it comes to the sale. So the government, what the government did was to pull what I'd say is a populist move. They started. Right. Kenya, you can imagine Kenya playing China on Kenyans.
That's one way to put it. But here's the thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's introduce a different spin here. I'm not as savvy to this, but we had talk of the stabilization fund earlier, and one of the discussions yesterday was that the government is able to pull this because they're speculation for the night. They're speculated plans to compensate our retailers for the slash margins, because if you look at it, margins for retailers were cut by up to a third, which is around almost 8 shillings, 7.95. I feel like that's a bigger story than, you know, actual holding. What do you think, Felix? And again, what do you think the rest of us in the discussion?
It's very good, Ali, that you've mentioned a stabilization fund. Maybe for those who don't know what a stabilization fund is you usually find in most countries, in Africa, a very good country that we can understand for stabilization, that we can actually use as a benchmark for stabilization fund study is Ghana. So what stabilization funds do is that they would be able to compensate the lot of taxes that we're being taxed on oil. You guys are paying, I think, for those who are buying oil, actually close to 57% of oil, of the money that you pay for a liter of fuel is actually going directly to taxes. So you'd imagine what level of margin that would be. Our prices, our oil prices, our fuel prices can actually be as low as 80 if we had a stabilization fund, because what a stabilization fund would do is to ensure that we don't have any direct shocks whenever there are changes in global oil prices. So what would really happen is that the government, and I know there's been a lot of discussion around this, is instead of the government would actually compensate, Ali, just as you've said, they would compensate oil marketing companies for the change, the loss that they are going in, so as to be able to maintain that price at a certain level. I know in Kenya, this is not going to happen, because in reality, we yet to have a stabilization fund. And even if we were to have one, we know that oil prices have to go up a little bit so that we can be able to accommodate the new fund. Definitely, you know, the government, we're going to have taxes come in here left, right and center. So I don't know about you, but I think that's another stress that's coming in one way or the other. Something definitely is coming up. So if we're to have a stabilization fund, man, I personally wouldn't want that to happen, because it's another tax, and we're tired of taxes. As a Kenyan, I'm tired of taxes. I don't know if you are. I don't know if your niece who's listening is tired of taxes. I don't know about you, but for me, not. Let's hold on that idea for now.
I don't know. You know, when you say we're tired of taxes, it just kind of reminds me of just the number of taxes that have been added this year, and not to move away from the discussion, but the measures that we're waiting to see with the IMF. So let's move on to Rwanda. What do you guys think? I personally look at Rwanda as an Eastern African country, and I feel like the little steps that it is taking towards, especially things like immobility, and well, the current wind that they're planning, they're putting infrastructure in place for local manufacturing of vaccines, I see it being quite a force to reckon with. And in terms of immobility, we've seen a Rwandan startup, which I think on Monday raised around $3.5 million, which is quite an amount in the immobility space in the African market, from Ecosystem Integrity Fund, just to scale its operations. And as I said earlier, the country has already attracted the attention of Volkswagen, which built the first electric charging station. And as of yesterday, they announced news of another. And just apart from that, we have quite a number of, you know, incentives in the country, incentives around the cost of energy, around taxes and infrastructure, just to make it less costly to own an EV. Does anyone know where we are in Kenya as a country, or what are some of the steps that we are or we should be making towards becoming, you know, a more EV-friendly country? Because here's the thing, we know that sustainable or rather sustainability is definitely the future, and we're already seeing other African countries take bold steps towards that.
Well, Ali, let me just start off. First of all, I think, let's really be honest and say that the governance system in Rwanda is slightly different from what we have in Kenya. Whenever we are comparing Rwanda, there are a lot of factors that I usually look at. First of all, let's start by comparing GDP, for example, for the two countries. We see that Kenya's GDP is way higher. We're looking at population, where Kenya beats Rwanda. There are a lot of things, even when it comes to governance. The only thing that I really like about Rwanda is that Rwanda is honestly, I think, when it comes to public finance, I think that's one thing that Rwanda really beats most African countries. Oh, they beat Uganda again. For Uganda, I have a lot of data on you. Just to air it out, I think Rwanda beats most African nations when it comes to corporate governance. And I think it's also because of the kind of regime that they have with a president who's usually seen as a no-nonsense dude, more like a dictator or stuff. I'm not saying that Kagame is a dictator, but that's something that people actually say about it. When it comes to them having the EV charging stations, Ali, I think one of the things that guys really have to know is that the contract that was actually signed by the government of Rwanda and Volkswagen Group, the South African factory, is actually the one that set up the unit in Rwanda. So by the time when this, it was actually seen as more of an informal contract. It was something that was not planned for, so to speak. They never even planned for it. It was more like these guys were meeting, and the meeting was not even meant for Rwanda and VW to set up. But that informal agreement is what has pushed us up to see this happen at this point. But also, just to appreciate Kenya, we've seen Nopia Ride, that is by Nissan. Actually, we have a lot of EV charging stations within the country, Ali. So as much as Rwanda is celebrating the second one, we need to appreciate just how much we have in Nairobi and in other parts of the country as well. And also, there was a video that was actually aired a few weeks ago, I think about 3 or 4 months ago. Actually, I think about 1 or 2 months ago on BBC, that was actually indicating about EV development in Kenya alone, where we're seeing guys actually, we're seeing guys who are making motorbikes, that's the border, purely we are going electric, and we're seeing them transforming the tour vans, the one that take tourists in various parks. I know they're starting with Masai Mara, and they also did some with Tsavo, but we're really hoping that they would be able to move across. We saw guys do a lot when it came to EV. So as much as we didn't have them import EV directly, but whatever they were actually doing was they would transform engines for most of these vehicles. So an example is in that video, I think I'll be able to find it and just share it, where they were actually telling guys, they were actually transforming a Toyota Land Cruiser, I believe, to an EV where the guys can actually charge, and it would take long. So I think we're making a few strides here and there. So as much as we're looking on Rwanda, I think we can also look at the steps that we've had. Globally, I know it's still a very small stake, but if only Mobius could actually start making EVs, man.
We wish. I think they still have the issue that the tax tussle they're dealing with KRA. I'm not so sure we've been much progress for that, have we now?
Yeah, let's hope that they get to clear that up first before we can be able to push through with the EVs dream.
I feel like on EVs, Africa can actually have have a head start, especially on electric boda-bodas, given their popularity, especially in East Africa and in Kenya and Uganda. I think there's a Ugandan company that actually aims to ride on that, and the fact that Africa doesn't have to wait for, you know, the world, or rather the first world and the second world to pioneer EVs. Rather, as they make electric cars, we could focus on electric motorbikes because they seem to have more viability here, so to speak, and more popularity. And given the number of startups in, you know, in the area, especially in Kenya and Uganda, Uganda is quite ahead on this compared to Kenya. Just riding on boda bodas, we could be onto something.
Well, I don't know about you, but we've seen a lot of local companies, mostly in Uganda, because I think Uganda is actually doing a lot when it comes to boda-boda transport. And I know that earlier this week, we had a Ugandan company actually raise funds, I think about $3.1 million. The Ugandan company, I'm just trying to get the name for the Ugandan company that actually raised funds for boda-boda. We've seen companies like Safe Boda, which actually left Kenya, really performing very well when we get to Uganda. So I think Uganda can actually be a good start point when we're looking on EVs for boda bodas, because we know what's happening in Kenya. I don't think that the boda boda system in Kenya is really something that one can be able to control that much. And also, I don't think that our guys are really in a position to start accepting changes. I think one of the challenges that we're having is change, is accept to change. Generally, just bringing back this change into the system is one major challenge that we don't have as a country. So even if we have boda boda guys here and you want to start telling them to pick up and try to adopt new technology, unless we have a system where we totally put a ban on them, then it could be, but I don't think that's going to happen. So that could be a challenge. But for Uganda and Rwanda, it's something that's workable. They can actually be the pioneers. But I believe Uganda can actually do that easily than any other East African country. But it's also a challenge. Maybe Uganda is also planning to have guys buy, locals actually, buy oil. So them accepting another new form of tech would also be a challenge, because they need the locals to buy the fuel from them as well.
I mean, they do. And I think in Kenya, policy definitely has a lot to play in. I don't know about your experience, Felix, and my interactions with the boda-boda industry have mostly been rudimental, in the sense of it's just individuals. But, and of course, a few interactions with Safe Boda. But I feel like with the right incentives KPLC would definitely have a role to play here. So this becomes too speculative. But I feel like with the right incentives, we still could have room, especially in towards the semi-urban towns. But that's a lot of wait and see. Maybe to move to another country. Nigeria today decided to sort of hold foreign currency imports for sugar and wheat. And to quote what the central bank said, was sugar and wheat go into a forex restriction list. We must work together to produce these items in Nigeria rather than importing. And just apart from the restrictions on imports for the two items, we've also seen that the Nigerian currency, the Naira, has tanked a little bit. And I think earlier in the day, it had hit lows of 437 against the dollar. And we've seen that, especially last month, the inflation rose to, I think, a four-month high, rising by up to 1.16 to 22.95. What do you think about this restriction specifically?
Well, you know, Ali, we've really seen we've seen Nigeria really do take a lot of stand when it gets to mostly anything that's likely to affect the Naira. Ali, the Naira is one of the most manipulated currencies globally. So I think that's what the Nigerian Central Bank is really trying to control. So I'm thinking that what we really need to do is to what I think is the Central Bank of Nigeria, CBN, is just trying to see ways in which they can be able to control the risk that is pegged to their currency. Also, you see, Nigeria, I think what they're trying to do is if they can be able to just try and ensure a little bit of internal self-sustainability. So that's one thing that I know that we can usually be able to, just according to the statement, if you watch the live view that the CBN governor was actually saying was, yes, they want to control a lot of it. It's because these are some of the things, whenever there's a high demand and there's imports for most of this, then there would be manipulation. They started with Bitcoin, then again to something else. So I think slowly we're going to see a lot of tougher measures by CBN to just control the internal sort of like currency outflow, at least from the internal perspective, as much as they can be able to manage that from their own internal systems. So I think I don't really think it's going to make any change. The Naira has been going down on a very long time, but I think that we can just be able to have a look and maybe see. Let's watch it out for a week and just see if it will be able to make any change.
I'm happy that you've actually mentioned cryptocurrency, because Alphonse here was asking about Turkey's ban on cryptocurrency, which cryptocurrency payment specifically, which has seen Bitcoin tank, and I think earlier today it had fallen all the way to 60,900 from highs of, you know, 64,000 earlier in the week. And we also saw that if Ethereum also fell by 3.29%. This tussle, I feel like a few countries make quite revolutionary adoptions of cryptocurrency, you know, like the likes of US. And then we have the just mentioned country, Nigeria, doing what it does best, and then now Turkey. What would you do as an investor? Again, not investment advice, given that we have some countries that are making backward steps towards cryptocurrency, especially in the light of Coinbase's listing.
What I'm really thinking, in my opinion, I think, you see, Ali, one of the reasons why, and I know that most of us are seeing that it's been a little bit of a challenge, but just the same as Nigeria, Turkey has had a lot of issues with regulations coming across central bank, just from the central bank to the stock market to forex trading, and now they're getting into Bitcoin. I don't know maybe to what impact it would have, but you see, if the moment Turkey banned trading on BTC, we saw a decline of about 5%, a decline of 5% on the prices. My thought is that maybe whatever Turkey is really trying to do as well is to control, for them, I know it's sort of like the control of maybe illicit flow of funds. Ali, the main reason why Turkish Central Bank sort of banned cryptocurrency, it's mainly because of the concern that everybody else has on crypto, mostly for those who've invested. Long-term investors, we know that the presence of a regulatory authority usually would give a lot of sense and a lot of just acceptance for whether it's currency, whether it's a commodity. So whatever we're seeing Turkey actually mention is the main reason why they're banning cryptocurrency is because of the lack of supervision and regulation. So this is not only from Bitcoin, but all the way to crypto assets and stuff like that. But now also, I think we need to just understand that, you know, crypto is now being picked up globally. We are seeing companies accepting cryptocurrency. We are seeing we're seeing demand for cryptocurrency really pick up and over time. But I honestly think that us picking up and saying that this would affect crypto for short term, I don't think so. I think this is something that might affect crypto, mostly when it comes to areas within the Middle East. It might affect crypto trading for long term, but I don't think that it will also have a ripple effect to other economies. It's like when Nigeria banned crypto trading the other day. You saw it got to a point where Central Bank of Nigeria actually retracted that statement and even said that they only had a few concerns, but they didn't actually issue a total ban on crypto or such or stuff like that. So I honestly think it's something that's very good, in my opinion. That's crypto as an asset, but sad for Turkey. Let's see just how far it will go. Let's see if the president Erdogan would make any changes as well, like he did last time when the central bank governor decided to raise the rates. I think that was about a month ago.
So apart from just the payments, what I actually found interesting in what Turkey said was in this press release, and quote unquote, it said payment service providers cannot develop business models in a way that crypto assets are used directly or indirectly in the provision of payment services and electronic money insurance, and cannot provide any services related to such business models. I don't know, I'm still waiting. I still haven't gotten the gist of how this could mean well for cryptocurrencies, and I'm waiting for Kaptich. I see he's still typing, just to understand how this could be beneficial in the long term. But then, aren't the concerns cited by Turkey, you know, concerns like the market values are excessively volatile and they could be used in illegal actions? Aren't those concerns already available in other currencies? What do you think?
Maybe one thing that I would ask you and anybody else who's trading crypto, now to ask you from an investment banker's angle, I would want to ask, why are you buying crypto? I know that we hold a few of these securities, but people would usually ask, why are you buying the security? And if you came to me as an investment banker and asked me that I need to buy, I want to buy Safaricom, I would ask you why you're buying it, and you can tell me. But, you know, I would agree to some level, but also disagree. But thinking, just as I mentioned earlier on, not thinking as an investor, but sort of like thinking to a level thinking as an investment banker, old school investment banker, is people would tell you that we are not buying we're buying company X or Y because of the asset respect to it. So the main challenge that most of these central banks are having is that there's no sort of like asset that is really pegged to crypto, and that regulation aspect. Governments usually love to regulate stuff. It's one thing that governments really, really love, and the lack of it is something that I know that most government would actually really feel slightly threatened to. It's like democracy. Governments would to think that they can control what information gets to you. The moment when the government thinks you have that information to yourself, then they definitely would start getting worried. What's really happening? So I still think, and I agree with you, that it's true. The government is putting in a lot of activities here and there. But I would ask you, why are you buying, what value are you buying in a crypto currency? Is it the dollar that you're buying? Considering most of the cryptocurrency asset, the price is set against the USD. So what are you buying? Are you buying the dollar, or what really are you getting from it? What asset is pegged to it? So I know that's one thing, and I wish that Kaptich would have been in so that he can answer that, but maybe that's a question for another day. I don't know if Kaptich is now offering to speak, or if he's still held up.
I see he said that Bitcoin and crypto has been through cycles before. What I have noted is usually crypto comes out stronger. And I guess it's an ongoing discussion. It's something that we'll definitely wait to hear from Kaptich and everyone else in the room. Please, in case you did miss our discussion on crypto crisis, I think there's a file that was shared earlier, which would give you quite a deeper insight on what they are, how they work. Last week's discussion was quite powerful. And Felix, we have a sound bit of that?
Yeah, I know we can be able to share. I believe it's actually on the forum. So guys can just go into the forum and check. When you're looking in the media, there's a place where there's the voice. I know that will be there. And there's also a place where we shared the file. You can be able to find the recorded session, the last session on cryptocurrency. Also, at the same time, I think you can head over to Hitha app, the podcast segment. I know there's already the discussion that we had on crypto, so that's something that I know as well that would come in handy.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I think we've covered a lot that we intended to today. And maybe now would be a good time to close the discussion.
No, I know we've discussed a lot of stuff. We've actually completed almost everything. The last topic we had today was about Turkey, and we've just touched on that. But I know the discussion on Turkey is going to be able to continue as we go, because I'm seeing Kaptich is still on the forum, still bringing in a few things here and there. As a crypto professional, I believe he'll be able to bring in a lot more interest, and we can be able to discuss that. So I think that's from my end, Ali. Thanks a lot. I'll just hand over back to you so you can be able to call today's session.
Again, it's 9:45. Definitely a sacrifice from all our listeners. We thank you for joining this forum, and we'll have next Friday's a little bit earlier, around 3:30. In case you do have anything that you'd want us to discuss, please feel free to share. You can also engage directly via the Hisa app. I see we have quite a growing community, and I think that would be sort of a wider space to interact with professionals from all walks of life. I see Kaptich says where crypto is, it has surpassed censorship. I think what crypto is, a belief of sound currency. It truly is a belief. So back again, you can interact with more of these discussions via the Hisa app, and stay tuned and have a good evening.